Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Saturday. Time to go into the vault. This time we're pulling an episode from January 10th, 2017. This is an episode that you did with Christian.
Yeah, this was a pretty fun one that I figured would be a good one to pull back out, because it's the science of holy butter. It's the parts I remember the most are where we're just talking about what butter is and how it's kind of amazing the saga that it goes through, because it's essentially sunlight. It is sunlight transformed through a few different processes into a lump of substance that you have in your refrigerator.
Well, I guess that's true of pretty much all our food. But
well, yes. But there's some,
but butter looks like sunlight.
It's right. It looks like sunlight. You know, uh-huh. It seems to shine.
Uh-huh.
And also we get into some of the sacred ideas wrapped up in butter. And all this, a lot of this is springboarding off of an excellent butter book that we'll reference in the episode.
All right. Well, butter up.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
This is the secret name of butter. Tongue of the gods, navel of immortality, we will proclaim the name of butter. We will sustain it in this sacrifice by bowing low. These waves of butter flow like gazelles before the hunter. Streams of butter caress the burning wood. Agni, the fire, loves them and is satisfied.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Christian Sager. Bow at the feet of butter.
Yeah. I thought we needed a nice regal opening there, and that is a quote from the Rig Veda. This is from around 1500 BCE.
So we are going to really dive into butter. The episode, I wanted to do like an episode title called Holy Butter, Batman, because it seems like that might fit the best. But we are going to talk about religious uses of butter. We're also going to talk about the basic food science of preparing butter, mm-hmm. and then butter war,
yeah.
which is a very real thing. In fact, so real that it's generated a satirical children's book all about butter.
Yes. I imagine a number of you are familiar with this. It is Dr. Seuss's The Butter Battle Book, published in 1984. And it is a satire that tackled the very serious topic of Cold War, the nuclear arms race, and mutually assured destruction. It is the only children's book that I've run across that ends with the contemplation of mutually assured nuclear destruction.
Yeah, I was not familiar with this specific Dr. Seuss book until today. And I watched the Ralph Bakshi animated version on YouTube this morning in preparation for this. And it blew my mind. It was like, I wonder how it would have changed me as a person if I'd seen this when I was like 4 or 5 years old, you know?
Yeah, I don't think I saw it when I was a kid. And this is this animated version, by the way, narrated by Charles Durning. For anyone out there who's not familiar with it, you should be able to find it on YouTube.
Yeah, it was everywhere.
And it's such an interesting story because to a kid, it's just a goofy tale involving these bird-like people. And the basic plot here is you have a cold war between two factions. One side firmly believes that you put your butter on top of the toast,
yeah,
on top of the bread. And then the other side, on the other side of this big wall, they believe you put the butter on the bottom of the bread.
And that sounds ridiculous and would never happen with real human beings. And yet, when we talk about margarine and butter and what happened with them in the 19th century, going into the 20th century, not that long ago, it's not that far apart.
Yeah, I think one of the things about butter is that today especially, we just take it completely for granted.
It's, yeah.
And maybe a little less if you buy really good butter or you get involved in a love affair with coffee, with butter in it, with bulletproof coffee and
yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, it's this yellow stuff that's maybe delicious and certainly has a huge role in so many different recipes.
Yeah.
And large quantities of it go into most, you know, restaurant foods to make it delightful. But we don't think about the wonder of butter. We don't think about the alchemy of butter and the miracle of butter. And it's easy to forget that we have all of these wonderful examples from human history where as our introduction suggests, there is something divine about butter.
Well, it certainly tastes great. And I don't think I've ever met a person who says they don't like butter. You know, like everyone likes butter. It's butter. It's great. It tastes great. But
you may not use butter for, you know, you may have made an ethical or dietary choice to.
Yeah, totally. But still, it tastes lovely. It's funny you mentioned like the taste of it and like it being so ubiquitous because you're right. Like I use butter every day in cooking some way or another. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of always get the generic store brand, you know, and then my wife recently splurged and she bought that Kerrygold Irish butter, that like
that's
really,
good
really good kind of expensive butter. And I reserve it for special things. Like I don't just cook with Kerrygold butter, you know, like that's special.
Yeah, we got into that butter a while back, my wife and I, when we briefly did. We did like a summer of the coffee butter concoction.
Yeah, I remember hearing about this from you.
Yeah.
And that kind of went away, didn't it? Like the bulletproof coffee thing. I heard about it for right around the time you guys were doing it, and then it just disappeared.
Well, it's still around.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people do what we did, and you do it for a little bit.
Yeah,
maybe you know it forces you to change your patterns a bit, and then you realize, oh well, actually, I don't need to put butter in my coffee in the morning.
It tastes great, probably. But it's probably, I would assume, fattening, right?
Yeah, but I don't want to get into the whole, like, there are a number of claims that are made about buttered coffee that proclaim that it has almost mystical properties, which is kind of in keeping with what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the main benefit of buttered coffee that I found was that it was very filling for someone who normally just has coffee and smoothie for breakfast.
Okay, yeah.
So I was sustained all the way through lunch and maybe even past lunch without needing to snack. But the curious thing is about a summer of coffee and butter kind of cured me of that. So now a lot of the time I don't snack in the mornings anyway.
Oh, interesting. So. Okay. And you're back to just like coffee and smoothies?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, I might give it a shot. Yeah.
And everything's worth a shot, right?
Yeah. Maybe ice cream and butter.
Now that might not work so well. All right, well, let's kick off by getting, in a way, we're going to get this out of the way, because I know the one thing that most of you are not excited about is to hear about the process of creating butter. But yeah. I want to really help frame this in an exciting way. I want you to think about it not so much as, oh, you milked a cow or some other mammal and then you transformed its milk into a solid substance that's spreadable. Think of it as a series of three miracles by which one turns the light of the sun into a pat of butter.
Again, holy butter.
All right. So first, let's just give at least passing credit to the alchemy of photosynthesis. The grass in the field converts energy in the form of sunlight into chemical energy in the form of sugars or other carbohydrates. So that's the first miracle. Second, a female ruminant, be it a cow, a sheep, a camel, a water buffalo, a goat, etc., they consume the grass. And truly, as Elaine Kosrova points out in her excellent book, Butter, A Rich History, you're better off thinking of it as of the cow or the camel or whatever the animal might be, as a mobile a harvester and processing unit, as opposed to just an animal that's eating. Because these ruminants are built to transform grass into milk. Consider the fact that they have this three- or four-chambered stomach. They have an upper dental pad instead of teeth that's perfect for masticating the greens. Each animal puts its own particular chemical spin on the process, but they crunch up the greens and ferment them in their many-chambered guts. 8 hours of feeding with cows, 8 hours of ruminating, and then the remains of the day are just resting. So the maceration, the repeated chewing of the cud, because they'll swallow it, it'll come back up,
yeah,
all that. This helps carry out the second miracle, okay? The transformation of a low-fat diet of grass into high-fat milk. So the broken-down food is even further assaulted in the guts of these creatures by microbes in this oxygen-free fermentation chamber. The grassy meal is broken down to its very basic elements, strings of carbon and hydrogen molecules, and then the other bacteria down there, they recombine the elements into volatile fatty acids.
This is reminding me of a like 4-H trip I went on when I was in elementary school. You might have had a similar experience, or maybe somebody out there listening has. They took us around like a working farm and kind of showed us how everything worked. And there was this one cow that had like a window cut into
its
side.
Have you seen one of these? I've never seen one in person.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it was almost like there was a porthole built into its side, and you could look inside. And it's not like you're watching butter being made, you know, but I was like so fascinated with this as a kid. Like, why would you do that? Wouldn't that hurt the cow? Like, it was so strange to me. I still to this day, I don't really think I know why, other than it's probably for health practices, right? To make sure that everything's working okay.
To have a window into the cow?
Yeah.
I'm assuming an educational outreach?
Yeah. Maybe that was it. It was just for us to be able to see inside the living cow. Yeah. Huh. Maybe
this requires more research. We'll have to look into.
We need to come back to this.
Maybe someone out there can fill us in.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have this this wonderful fermentation process going on, and only half of the fat is coming from the cow's diet. The rest is coming from the cow's own body fat. All right, so there's your second miracle: ruminant milk, a fatty liquid that's sole purpose is to ensure the survival of the animal's young. Or, you know, for a bunch of ape creatures to steal, drink, and then process into various butters and cheeses. It's also worth noting that the exact composition of this milk is going to vary from species to species, with additional factors depending on environment and diet. So a ewe produces twice the fat content of cow milk. Goat milk has smaller, more digestible fat molecules. Yak milk has less sugar and more protein. Camel's milk has three times as much vitamin C, and water buffalo milk has twice the fat of cow milk.
What's like the weirdest type of butter you've ever had? Because I don't think I've really experimented all that much other than like goat butter probably.
Yeah, I don't think I've experimented much at all with butters made from different milks.
Yeah.
The closest I've come, I guess, is having a few different types of cheeses.
So
I've had sheep cheese, I've had goat cheese, cow cheese, and if you've had actual buffalo mozzarella than you've had cheese made from water buffalo.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Again, the fat content, that's why that is the premier.
Oh, I love some buffalo mozzarella. My other favorite cheese is from a very specific part of the world, Zakopane, Poland.
Oh, yeah?
I believe it's a goat cheese. But again, oh, just phenomenal smoked cheese. Anyways, this is making me hungry.
All right, so the animal's milked, and then you have to make cream. That's the next step on our way to actual butter. And this is achieved by allowing the milk to sit and then skimming the resulting layer of fat molecules that have collected on the top. They float it up to the top. You skim it off. And you can make butter from whole milk, like the rest of the milk in that vat, but the more assured route is via the cream.
Yeah, so like Robert said, we're not going to really like hold your hand and walk through the how it's made kind of thing. If you want to look at that, there's plenty of articles online. But basically, there's just tiny fat molecules that float to the top of this milk. They form the cream. You stir them up. That's what the agitation is, until they clump together to form wondrous butter.
Yeah. The cow or the sheep or the camel, they've made this wondrous liquid to feed their offspring.
Yeah.
And the humans have come in and said, actually, we're going to take just the very best of that, the very top fatty stuff, and then we're going to process it.
It seems really wasteful, but then you realize that there's a place for all the various leftovers as well.
Yeah, because what happens next is you agitate or stir up the cream. This shakes the fat molecules out of position and causes them to clump together. Eventually, after prolonged stirring, the fat molecules clump so much that they separate from the liquid in the cream and a solid mass forms. The liquid is buttermilk, and of course that goes on to be used as buttermilk.
Yeah.
And the solid mass is butter. Behold the third and final miracle.
So a little research, I found this, that one of the earliest recipes for butter involved putting the milk or the cream inside an animal skin and just suspending it and letting it swing back and forth until butter formed. Now today, to qualify as butter, it has to contain at least 80% butterfat with no more than 16% water and 2% milk solids. And you need 21 pounds of cow's milk to make 1 pound of butter. So to get it to be that consistent yellow that we're all used to, it's actually artificially colored. And this is important. It'll come back around later when we talk about margarine. The way they do that is with something called annatto, which is a food coloring that comes from the seeds of, I believe it's pronounced, the achiote tree.
Okay.
So it's not as yellow as we're used to. That's a food coloring that's added to it.
Okay. So that's super yellow butter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at this point, like you said, we could go into greater detail about the chemistry of what's going on here, but hopefully this will give you just a fresh and new idea of what's going on. Again, I love that idea that solar energy has become fatty, delicious butter, has become this, ultimately, the superfood, this premier of food stuff that, and you'll realize why it becomes so valuable to the humans who obsess about it.
Well, and I know some of you out there are wondering this because I was when I was doing the research. So if butter comes from milk, is there human butter? And what does that taste like? And the answer is yes. I don't know what it tastes like, but yes, there is human butter. In fact, just 2 years ago, a woman experimented with her own breast milk and shared photos on Reddit of the butter that she created. And it caused a little bit of a stir the week that she did this. People were freaking out, either saying, oh my God, this is so cool, or oh my God, that's so disgusting. But yeah, same process works with human milk.
Now, in her defense, there are people who seem to freak out when they realize that human breast milk exists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And by people, I mean, of course, men.
I got the impression that was
there's a certain segment of the male population who seems to want to remain in complete denial of certain biological
There definitely
processes.
Seemed to be like some people that were like, that is the most disgusting thing ever. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And then the other side was, oh, my God, I want to try that.
Okay. That's kind of the divide in most Reddit threads.
Yeah, Reddit known for its diversity in opinions. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, we're going to get into this idea of holy butter. We're going to run through various examples from different cultures throughout history, the way that they've obsessed about this substance. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AsteproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. All right, we're back.
So the word butter actually comes from the ancient Greek combination of boo and tyron, which means cow cheese. Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to go through a couple of different uses, religious experience uses of butter throughout many cultures around the world. First one we talked about here was Tibetan butter. and I couldn't find a lot on this, so I'd love to know if anybody else out there has heard about it. But apparently, it's used in the embalming of bodies, or at least it was used in the embalming of bodies on those of deceased llamas. And they basically would simmer their corpses in boiling butter.
And these are Tibetan Buddhist holy men.
Yeah.
Not actual llamas of anyone out there.
Yeah.
Right. Just to be clear.
Right. Yeah. Although that would be a great llama recipe, probably.
Yeah. On this subject of funeral butter usage, I did run across the fact that in ancient Egypt, of course, the ancient Egyptians were known for their elaborate rites of embalming.
We
discussed this a bit on the show in a couple of episodes at least. And they used various things. I mean, they seem to have used pretty much everything
right.
in this practice. Anything you could get their hands on that could be used to preserve the corpse and give it a lifelike appearance. And they would use butter along with sawdust and sand as a way to plump up desiccated flesh, either by stuffing it into the mouth or through incisions in the skin.
For some reason, that makes a lot of sense to me only in the sense of that, like, I know a lot of plastic surgery now involves injecting animal fat into skin. So like if you're going to try to form flesh somehow, whether it's dead or alive, that seems like a natural place to go, right?
Yeah. I mean, especially for the ancient Egyptians who I believe we've mentioned on the show before have some of the earliest examples of what is essentially plastic surgery.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then what about Buddha butter? This sounds like somebody's got to patent that if they haven't already. I'm sure there's probably some company out there already.
It's oh, yeah.
A picture of the smiling Buddha with a stick of butter in his hands. Well, 2,500 years ago, there were butter sculptures called tomas, which were made to celebrate Shakyamuni Buddha's victories. Now, today, there's actually still an annual butter festival that's celebrated in March as part of the Mon Lam Festival, I believe that's how you say it. And at this festival, thousands of butter lamps are lit, and these signify the wisdom and light of the Buddha. These are made from clarified yak butter, and they line the streets. Now, donating such butter to the monasteries is actually believed to bring good karma because it allows the monks to craft the lamps for this holiday. So there's another one.
Yeah, this one is fascinating. In that Khosrova book that I mentioned, Butter, A Rich History, she goes into it in depth. And I'm not going to attempt to share everything here. If you want to read more about it, you should definitely pick that book up. But she says that that we have this modern tradition of creating these tomas. And the modern tradition dates back probably to around 641 CE.
Okay.
But I think this, though, refers specifically to the version that survives today and not that earlier tradition that you alluded to.
Okay.
So torma, as you mentioned, traditionally yak butter, but they'll also mix in roasted barley flour or sampa, and then sometimes wax, as I'll describe here. So traditionally, this is crazy, the monk would use only yak butter with the sampa, and they would form a range of shapes and designs for tantric rituals and offerings. And the monks would have to cool their fingers to sculpt the butter clay. They continually dip their fingers or the clay itself into a bowl of cold water or the snow, and often they would be working in like a really cold room.
Okay.
So it would be super tough. Where this is not just a thing where someone would grab some butter and a small bowl of cold water and then, oops, I've got to work around with it a little bit and look, I made a sculpture. No, they would spend months on this. And the artist would often suffer illness, frostbite, arthritis. And then at the end of all this, the sculpture is just going to melt away in the spring. So it's this perfect symbol of impermanence, much like the Tibetan practice of crafting mandalas out of multicolored sand.
Wow. All right. So it's easy to do this in Tibet because it's cold there. What happens if I'm going to jump ahead in the notes here. What happens if you want to sculpt butter here in America? Because it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's not holy necessarily, but the butter cow, I mean, has anybody out there seen a butter cow before? I'm talking about a life-sized butter sculpture of a cow. It might strike close to home for some of our listeners, you might have, I first heard about the Butter Cow on The West Wing when the character C.J. Craig does this whole celebration talking about how great the Butter Cow is. But it was actually first sculpted in 1911 by J.K. Daniels at the Iowa State Fair. And you basically start with wood, metal, wire, and steel mesh to frame the 600-pound slab of low moisture, pure cream Iowa butter. That's what, at least that's what the Iowa State Fair says. They put that in a 40-degree cooler and apply more layers of butter until you've made a life-size cow. Now, some of you out there are going, whoa, that's a lot of butter that's wasted. Well, unlike the Tibetan practice that we were just talking about earlier, this butter is supposedly recycled and reused for up to 10 years afterwards.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. But it's interesting, like, present day, we can put them inside a big cooler. Mm-hmm. But in Tibet, they had to go outside with cold water and they're getting sick. But they're like still doing the same kind of, you know, aesthetic practice.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, too, to note that eventually you have Tibetan monks that are engaging in this practice moving down into warmer portions of India.
Ah.
So how do you do this if it's a warmer climate?
Right.
Well, monks now residing in India are often forced to use ghee or margarine mixed with paraffin wax. So that's where the wax comes
into
play.
Gotcha. Okay. And that probably helps keep it all together. Yeah.
Now, another Eastern tradition I ran across comes from Chinese Buddhism. According to Chinese Buddhist master Tai and Te, the successive states of soul transformations in reincarnation basically line up with the stages in the transformation from milk to ghee. And I think that fits in rather nicely with what we read in the opening, idea that in the same way that a soul may go from life to life to life, and it's kind of this refining process, ideally, as you work towards a complete removal from the wheel of death and rebirth.
Yeah.
Also, we're seeing this, the sunlight, the grass, everything moving towards butter as the, I guess, the
butter is the pinnacle of human achievement.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when you read up on butter and people talk about like the ancient practices involving it, almost always they bring up the Bible because it's like one of our most read modern texts that references butter quite a bit.
Yeah, there's one part in particular that's worth pointing out. You know, not just for the Bible, basically Abrahamic tradition as a whole, because it concerns Abraham.
Yeah.
He's preparing food for three angels of the Lord who are visiting in Genesis 18. And if you think back to our John Dee episode, we're talking angels of the Lord here. These are terrifying,
right,
beautiful beings. They've taken human form, sure, but these are the guys that lay waste to cities.
Yeah. What else are you going to give them? Which would welcome them with, but butter.
Yeah. They said, hey, Sarah, help me fetch the bread and butter. We got three angels of the Lord coming. And it worked out. They apparently thought the butter was delightful.
Good. It's probably Kerrygold. They're not paying us.
You got to pull out the best stuff when the angels of the Lord come.
Well, that leads me to a totally opposite, unrelated to the Bible, butter cultural phenomenon. And that is the Yule Lads of Iceland.
Oh.
Now, Joe, our co-host, insisted that we had to bring this up. He recommended it to us. We've talked about the Yule Lads before. I think it was maybe last year's Christmas episode.
Yeah.
We were talking about them. But if you don't recall that, the basic gist is in Icelandic lore, instead of, or maybe it's along with Santa Claus, I'm not quite sure, there's 13 children who visit Iceland's kids during the 13 nights prior to Christmas, one each night. And they have these amazing names. There's all kinds of Yule Lads like Sausage Sniffer and Door Licker. But there is one that is specifically related to butter, and his name is Butter Greedy. At least that's what it translates as. So the gist is that you're supposed to put a shoe out on your windowsill. And if you're good, each day a Yule Lad will leave you candy in the shoe. Mm-hmm. But if you're bad, they fill it up with rotting potatoes. And so I'm wondering about Butter Greedy. Like, presumably he eats all your butter if you're bad, and he also puts rotting potatoes inside your shoe. But it immediately popped to Joe's mind when we said, hey, we're doing this episode on butter. And he was like, there's got to be a Yule Lad. And he was right. There was.
Yeah, because in a bit we're going to talk about some other superstitions and folk beliefs that line up with this idea of protecting that butter from, you know, real world thieves, but also supernatural threats, because right. this is a superfood stuff.
Yeah.
And especially in you know, in the winter, you're going to need this to survive.
Right. I mean, think about how much work goes into making it, especially yeah. like when you're not talking about an industrialized process, right? Like
right.
you're making it by hand, like you're going to really covet and conserve this stuff.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's survival. Real quick before we move on, I want to point out that Lord Krishna in Hinduism, there's a, you know, he's a noble, important figure in so many of the epics. But there's also this tradition of young Krishna, kind of like baby Krishna.
Okay.
You may have, a number of you may have seen pictures because he's depicted as basically this blue baby.
Yeah, Krishna. I kind of remember this. Yeah.
And he's a trickster and he's always getting into mischief. And one of the things he would do is steal butter.
Oh, okay. Well, that's quasi-related to the next instance of butter, which a lot of you are probably familiar with, and that's ghee. My wife uses ghee all the time in cooking. Essentially, in Hindu sacrifices, though, during the Vedic period, ghee was created because it's a kind of clarified butter that's made with various grains and vegetables. And back then, it was thought to satisfy the hunger of the gods. It would ensure order, make sure order was maintained on earth. And there was a ritual called Jatakarman that was performed at the birth of a boy and involved presenting the baby with ghee, honey, and gold. All right, so some of you out there are probably wondering, well, clarified butter, I like that. What's the difference between that and ghee, or what's traditionally called usli ghee? Well, they've both been made by melting butter over low heat, allowing the water content to evaporate so that the milk solids settle to the bottom of the pan. Then what you do is you skim the surface, you clear the fat, it's poured off, and the residue is discarded. But here's the difference. Clarified butter has the fat poured off as soon as possible. That way it keeps the milk solids from browning. For usli ghee, the butter is simmered until the solids are golden browned, and this is what gives it this nutty flavor. I'm sure many of you out there, if you've had Indian food, you're probably familiar with this flavor. You might not know that it's ghee, but it's delightful. And the vegetable ghee that was mentioned earlier, that's actually made from hydrogenated vegetable oils, and it basically resembles shortening.
Oh, okay.
And then another one that Joe brought to our attention. This is a weird one. He started talking about this yesterday, and I got a little nauseous. Then I did the research on it. Bog butter.
Yeah, this one originally came up a little bit in our research for the episode we did about ritual regicide. This
yeah.
idea that that you would have certain ancient cultures that would ritually murder kings or failed kings, you know, rulers or failed rulers. And one of the examples comes up in these early European cultures that would utilize the bogs.
Right.
You would find these bodies in the bogs that had been ritually murdered, because the bog was not, it wasn't just a place you dumped something you wanted to get rid of. This isn't like the mafia taking somebody out to a swamp and dumping them. The bog was a sacred place, and it was a place where it was, you know, it's a fitting spot to deposit yeah. the body of a king that had been killed in a sacrifice.
Especially because of its preservative qualities. It makes me think, like, it's interesting, like, bogs were sort of to Ireland and Scotland what the very arid desert was for ancient Egypt.
Yeah, it results in mummification, which is yeah. why we know so much about the bog people, and in this case, bog butter.
So you're probably going, wait, what is bog butter? What does that have to do with dead kings buried in bogs? Well, 430 samples of bog butter have been excavated from peat bogs in Ireland and Scotland, and they date back as early as 400 BC. Basically, it's buried several feet deep in these bogs in huge quantities. And I first thing that popped in my mind was, is this just like raw butter? Or is it in something?
Mm-hmm.
And we turned to an academic article about it, and it turns out it's both. It's either just a lump of butter, like a big lump of butter, or it's in a container that's usually made of wood, or it might be wrapped in animal bladders. And you're probably going, well, why are these people – okay, I get why they're preserving their dead kings, but why are they dropping butter in the bog? Well, it's probably because the bogs – have a well-documented ability to preserve that, and butter was really valuable. I mean, it was so valuable that it was used to pay rent and taxes. And in some areas, it was actually used to help waterproof fabric.
Huh.
And it was used in everything from building materials to candles. So burying it in a bog, well, you could have been doing that to preserve it, or maybe it was a way to change its flavor. And I wrote next to this in the notes because I'm thinking like, ugh, what does bog butter taste like? And it seems like nobody's really eaten bog butter. I mean, maybe they have, but I don't think it's like the idea is like you dig it up thousands of years later and it's so much better. You know, like it's not like that. But the butter, here's the other thing. It was also thought to cure illness. So some people placed it next to a person who was ill at the time, and they thought it might absorb their disease. But what happens if the victim dies? Well, then you take that butter and you bury it in a bog.
Huh, okay.
So maybe you really shouldn't eat that butter then because it's filled
it's
with
like
disease.
Cursed butter.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, that should be like a – that should have been a, like a Full Moon Entertainment directed DVD movie, like Attack of the Bog Butter, cursed
butter.
There's
still time. There's still time.
I can see it like moving and crawling around. Maybe even animating a butter cow.
Oh, yeah. That's the culminating scene is a butter cow comes to life and chases somebody into the bog.
All right. Well, let's see. What else do we have here? Real quick in passing, we did find an African example. In remote regions of Ethiopia, there's still some cultural use where of butter where the bride-to-be is lacquered with butter and red clay.
Huh. Okay.
Kind of a preparation for marriage.
Yeah.
But one of the more fascinating examples that we came across, and this ties back into this idea of butter theft, are these just various traditions and beliefs where one would protect the butter or attempt to steal butter through magic.
Yeah.
So in Norwegian, it's something called the smore cat or the butter cat. And it's a bajara, I believe, in Swedish, and a tilberi or snakur in Icelandic. Hmm. And it was a creature of spun yarn that, a sorcerer would make. And it sucked milk from other people's cows and returned it to its master.
Wow. Butter homunculi.
Yeah.
Made of yarn. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's crazy. And there's like a whole tradition of various like thread-based, weaving-based magic.
Yeah.
Which is very, very curious because you think about the creation aspect of all of this.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about using one like a magical use of one technology to tap into another technology.
Right, yeah.
So I've also read, and of course, traditions are going to vary, but I've read some accounts that the tilbury was created from a human rib dug up from a graveyard and brought to life when communion wine is spit on it three Sundays in a row.
Man,
all
right, this has to be in our butter horror movie. So you take a human rib, you spit on it for 3 weeks, and then you add yarn, and then you've got your butter homunculus cat being that goes and steals butter.
Yeah, or milk at least.
Yeah, milk.
But the butter is still very much at risk. And so you have all these magical protections that are utilized to protect the butter, including the magical butter knot. And this was a symbol that was used to magically protect butter in Icelandic traditions. And I had an image of it that it kind of looks like a pentacle, except one that is kind of skewed so that the base is broader and wider than the top.
Okay.
So it looks like, a kid misdrew a pentagon or something.
So this is a symbol that's drawn near the butter to protect it, or is it drawn in butter?
I think both, my understanding, is that it kind of varied. You would just, the symbol had to be associated with the butter.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see some other examples of various things you would do to the butter to safeguard it, including one rite that involved driving a rusty nail from a coffin into the side of your butter.
Okay.
And that would protect it from going bad or being stolen.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. I'm just collecting more ideas for my butter movie now.
Yeah. And hey, if anyone out there really wants to make a go at the Butter Harv movie, again, check out that book by Elaine Kosarova, Butter, A Rich History. It's in print right now. It's in digital form. I can't recommend it strongly enough. Best butter book you'll ever read. On that note, let's take a quick break, our final break. And then when we come back, we will discuss butter and war.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
All right, we've returned.
So we started off by talking about that Dr. Seuss story about the butter war. And it sounded vaguely ridiculous, right? That these two cultures would fight each other over which side of the bread they would put their butter on.
Yeah, it was the Ukes versus the Zooks. And as one propaganda poster in the book reminds us, Ukes are not Zooks, keep your butter side up.
And it sounds crazy, but we came pretty close to something similar here in the U.S. Maybe not a war necessarily, but there was some hysteria for sure surrounding butter. And it all started in France. In 1869, Emperor Louis Napoleon III offered a prize to whoever could make a low-priced version of butter for the lower classes and for the military. So it was butter for war. Mm-hmm. The winner,
and poor people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. The winner was French chemist, I'm going to get this name wrong, Hippolyte Méger-Mauret, and he invented margarine. which we all know and use today.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting how he figured it out, because he basically made that connection that we pointed out earlier, that a lot of the fat is coming from the animal itself.
Right.
So he said, why not process it from the animal itself?
Yeah, it's made from, well, at least his version was made from beef tallow. And he sold this patent to the Jergens Butter Making Company, and they eventually became part of Unilever. And Unilever is still one of the world's leading producers of margarine.
Huh.
So when it arrived here in the U.S. in the 1870s, there was a political economic battle between manufacturers of margarine and manufacturers of butter. And it led to, in 1886, the federal government had to pass the Margarine Act, which put a restrictive tax on margarine and demanded that its manufacturers pay a prohibitive licensing fee. This is a quote from the article that I read about it in National Geographic. It said, pro-butter political cartoonists pictured factories dropping everything from stray cats to soap, paint, arsenic, and rubber boots into the margarine mix, and a barrage of dubious scientific reports hinted that margarine caused cancer or possibly led to insanity.
Ah.
What's that remind us of that we just talked about also from this same period of time?
Oh, green tea.
Green tea. Yeah, people were saying that it made you crazy, it made you hallucinate, or it was ultimately because the manufacturers were putting illicit substances in it, like iron filings. But in this sense, the cartoonists, I think this was propaganda. I don't think necessarily that this margarine had stray cats dropped into it. But why did this happen? Well, okay, state politicians began fighting over the color of margarine. They were saying that coloring it yellow was false advertising because margarine's naturally white. It's made from tallow. And that's after its processing. But 32 states here in the U.S. passed laws to demand that margarine be dyed pink instead of yellow. And the Supreme Court actually had to intervene. And they overturned the laws because they said, look, it's illegal to enforce the adulteration of food.
Yeah. That sounds like some straight up Dr. Seuss nonsense right there. The idea that someone would say, actually, if you're going to sell that margarine, you got to dye it pink.
Yeah, it's just straight up right out of the Dr. Seuss book. Clearly must have inspired this story. Mm-hmm. They must have known about it. But yeah, it's just crazy to me. You know, I think about like all the insanity that's going on in our government right now and the back and forth, like haggling and kind of just nasty rhetoric. And it feels like, oh, this is just a product of today. And then you look back 100, 150 years ago and you're like, oh, no, like it was just as silly. People were yelling at each other about making margarine pink.
Yeah. I can imagine the way like modern headlines and social media would pick up on it. Like, oh, this legislator just introduced a bill to dye all of our margarine pink.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. You think this story is over? It's not. By the time we get to World War II, the United States needs margarine because the Depression and the war have led to butter shortages. Like we said, butter's it's a valued commodity. So margarine became more palatable to Americans because it was made with hydrogenated vegetable oils instead of animal fats, like the one we were just talking about with the ghee.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But during the war, margarine was even sold with capsules of yellow food coloring
to get past
all the fury about dyeing it. So it came white, but then you would add the yellow. So when you put it out on your table, it looked like butter.
Wow, that's crazy.
Except in Wisconsin. Wisconsin wasn't having any of this.
Of course not.
Because using yellow margarine in Wisconsin was a crime that was punishable by fines or imprisonment.
Oh, my goodness.
So you look at the Ukes and the Zooks and you think, well, that couldn't happen. Well, we got pretty close. We were at least imprisoning people and fining them in one state in the United States for how they used butter and or margarine.
Well, you know, to bring it all back around to the Ukes and the Zooks and the Butter Battle book, as I was getting ready with my notes for this episode, I ended up going to the library, checking out a copy of this book because we have a number of Seuss books in the house, but we don't have the Butter Battle book. Mm. So I thought, oh, I need to read this to my son. He loves Dr. Seuss. I love Dr. Seuss.
Yeah. Did he like it?
He liked it. He had questions about it, questions that I could only vaguely answer because the spoiler, but the book ends with a standoff as this arms race over how best to spread your butter has led to essentially the development of these little pill-sized nuclear weapons. And the Ukes and the Zooks are at a standoff. Who's going to drop theirs first?
Right.
And other Ukes and Zooks are going into bomb shelters, and it confronts mutually assured destruction. The idea that if nuclear weapons are ever deployed in a large-scale manner, it's just going to be complete destruction on both sides, not to mention environmental destruction as well.
So I haven't read the book, but I watched the cartoon version mm-hmm. this morning. And if it's similar, what really impressed me was that it's a story that doesn't hold your hand or a child's hand by saying, like, this is what you're supposed to learn from this.
Right.
Because both sides are hysterical in their rhetoric against one another and how they use butter. And they basically are amping up their technology in the, like, kind of silly Dr. Seuss, like, weaponry way, right? They're like weird slingshots and then things that catch slingshots and throw them back. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's interesting in the cartoon because it's like a father telling his son, like, this is why we hate them.
Yeah.
This is why you have to destroy them. And here's my personal story as to why. And usually in a children's cartoon or a story like that, you go, oh, well, that's the authoritative figure. I will listen to him and I will learn a lesson from him. But the lesson to be learned is, like, these people are all crazy and they're going to end up killing each other.
Yeah. Like, you read Seuss's The Lorax and they have that wonderful environmental message at the end. It's also kind of dark that says, look, the things are bad and it's up to you to change it and make it better. And here's something you can do. Like, it's all symbolized in the planting of the seed. You can plant more trees. You can care about the environment. And we might be able to reclaim some of what's lost. But at the end of the Butter Battle book, there's no suggestion.
Right.
It just shows you, like, how crazy the world has gotten and what kind of state we're in. And Seuss doesn't have an answer.
And Seuss, I can totally imagine Bastion being like, so who was right, the Ukes or the Zooks, or what am I supposed to do?
It raises a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I was tempted to say, it raises more questions now. And, and it's more of a potent story now because we have this renewed discussion of a potential nuclear arms race and nuclear tensions once more. Mm-hmm. This is a story that's never become unimportant.
Right. I don't think it'll ever be passe, right? Like, you and I will be dead and in the ground 200 years from now. The Butter Battle book will probably
still be
important. Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a wonderful book, but also a terrifying book for adults because the threat of nuclear war is terrifying and the threat hasn't gone away. And so in continuing this effort to highlight nonprofits, organizations that depend on donations on our episodes, I wanted to do a call out to the Arms Control Association. Okay, you can find them at armscontrol.org. They were founded in 1971. They're a national nonpartisan membership organization dedicated to promoting public understanding of and support for effective arms control policies. So that they have public education and media programs. It has a magazine, Arms Control Today. They provide policymakers, the press, and just the interested public with authoritative information, analysis, and commentary on arms control proposals, negotiations, and agreements, and related national security issues.
So maybe that's what you do if you've got a kid who reads the Butter Battle book and says, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I suspect the Arms Control Association probably has some media materials that, at least for us as adults, helps us to sort of better think about arms races and mutually assured destruction.
Indeed. So there we go. From butter to mutually assured destruction.
That's what we bring you here at StuffToBlowYourMind.com. And hey, also, I want to know some answers because we couldn't find them here. If you know what human butter tastes like, I want to know. If you know what bog butter tastes like, I want to know. What's the weirdest butter that you've had, like from an animal? There's all kinds of places to tell us. You can go on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. You can write us at Blow the Mind on all of those platforms, or you can go visit stufftoblowyourmind.com. You want to learn more about mutually assured destruction or butter? Well, that's where we've got all of our podcasts. We've got all of our videos, every blog post that we've ever written. Check it out.
Yeah, and as always, you can reach out to us. You want more episodes that focus on food products? You want one on cheese? Let us know. You want some more episodes that focus on the threat of nuclear annihilation? Let us know. We can do that as well. We walk both sides of the street here at Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Send us an email. Let us know at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.